Well, the Haunted Housewives are with us, and we're going to take your phone calls with them and talk a little bit more about spirit attachments in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, and we're back with the Haunted Housewives, Teresa Argee and Kathy Weber. And Teresa, what about these attached spirits that somehow latch on to people? How does that happen?
I think there's a number of different ways that a spirit can be attached to a person. I think sometimes it just feels some sort of affinity to them. Maybe they remind them of somebody that they were close to when they were living. There's also the possibility that that person who is having the attachment issues, maybe they have something that is weakening their character, and it's not a judgment. It's just if they have any sort of, if they're ill, if they have any sort of physical problems, maybe they're sick, they have some sort of chronic disease. Sometimes if people are going through any sort of mental breakdown or having any sort of emotional issues or addiction issues, we find that a lot too. And sometimes it's just because you've done something that's angered them, or you've done something that's made them find you so attractive in some way that they don't want to let go. A lot of it, I think, could be just you seem familiar to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's many different reasons, and I think the reasons that something becomes attached to you, that's where you find the solution of how you can get rid of it, because I think that there's different ways. Just like people are different, spirits are different, and there's not one cure-all for all attachments. My attachment was something definitely dark, something definitely, if not evil, definitely very negative to, and something that I did not want near me, and it was very, very bad. But then other people have attachments where it's just like this friendly ghost that follows them home. Kathy had an attachment that she thought was harmless, and I thought it was not as harmless as she thought. And that took quite a while. I mean, that was years that this thing was attached to her. She could talk more on that.
Go ahead, Kathy. What happened?
Well, for around 2 years, I did have something staying close by me. And Teresa says it was somewhat malevolent towards her. She got called a lot of names, and whenever we were together doing any type of paranormal investigation, he seemed to be present. And he made himself known to the point where we had to ask him to step back so that we could actually learn more about the spiritual energy where we were. But I believe he was picked up at Ohio State Reformatory, down in the area of the solitary confinement, and he was with me a good 2 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
I never felt he was malevolent towards me in any way. I did have strange things happen, like I mentioned the incidents with the cats being ill. That was all true. That happened during the period that he was around.
Yeah.
And I did see and hear some interesting things that were somewhat shocking for someone who does this regularly. Some big manifestation of a giant shadow thing and noises and the bed shaking and things like that. But I don't know. I found it pretty harmless. But Teresa was bothered to the point where I decided to look into it further. And I was told by a psychic worker that she was trying to learn more about Mike. His name is Mike. And what she said disturbed me, that he was attracted to me because of my energy, because I am fairly sensitive and I can pick up on spirits at times. And he believed that I could help him cross back over into the human world, which I found very strange. So at that point, that unnerved me a little enough to take steps to ask Mike to leave. And I did, like Teresa said, this takes a while sometimes. So I worked at it for a while, and it appears at this point in my life, it's been about over a year, Teresa, that he's gone now. So
say you ask them to leave, I mean, how many of them take you up on that?
Well, I have a ritual. Like she said, we do rituals to protect ourselves.
Sure.
Different things. I'm a Christian. I believe in the power of prayer, so I use prayer. But I have a ritual when I come home from any type of ghostly activity that I stop at my front door and I say, this is my home and my sanctuary, and you are not welcome in this realm. you know, you're welcome to go wherever it is you would like, and I'll meet you again, but right now you do not come into my home or come with me. And I've always followed that ritual, and Mike broke that rule, and he was here for quite a while, and you know, like I said, strange, unusual things happened, and you know, it even seemed to affect my granddaughters, which drove me a little crazy thinking about that. And that's probably when I said right away to Teresa, when I told her what had happened with my one granddaughter, I said, that's enough.
Enough is enough.
He's got to go. And so I did work at it for quite a while. I will tell you one thing I did, which people might make fun of me. I was in Sedona, which is a very spiritual town and a beautiful town. And I did venture out into the desert to the vortex that is supposedly out there. And I did work with Mike at the vortex. And I said, basically, it boiled down to, buddy, if you're going to get off, this is a good place. Because somebody might come along who can help you. And after that point is when it started to dissipate, that I did not feel his presence and I didn't experience the things I'd been experiencing before. I am a little nervous to this point still to invoke his name in any way for fear he's listening in and thinks that's an invitation to come back.
He may be listening to this show. Let's hit some phone calls here. Kathy in Idaho, you be the first. Go ahead, Kath.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thank you for taking my call, George. And ladies, it's nice to talk with you. I come from a family. I'm 68 years old and the youngest of three. My mother was an only child from the marriage. And we had a family secret, quote unquote, about a family member on my mom's side that just nobody really knew about. So I started doing genealogy research and I found out that this family member, it was a male, and he was basically incarcerated at the Lima State Hospital in Lima, Ohio. So when you gals said that you were from Ohio, I kind of took notice because apparently that hospital for the criminally insane was shut down in the 70s and it was turned into some other kind of an institution, and then I think it was just kind of shut down altogether, but it was huge, apparently. I wondered, number one, if you have ever done any research on that particular institution, and number two, it's called the Lima State Hospital, and number two, my older brother, with whom I had been sharing all this information on genealogy on this particular family member, called me back and he said he had been dreaming about, his name was Stefan, and he had been, you know, dreaming about him. I don't know, my brother had apparently an out-of-body experience when he was about 11 years old, so I know that there's, you know, he's maybe sensitive, I don't know, but just doing the research and the genealogy, it was really it was very powerful doing it on this person, and I never followed up on his records. But I wondered if you knew anything about the Lima State Hospital and dreams, the power of dreams, and if entities can come through from across the line, so to speak, through dreams. And I'll take my answer off.
Okay, which one of you two wants that? Dreams are powerful, and things do happen.
Well, Lima State, I have heard of it. I realized, I think it was built like in the early 1900s, and it was built specifically as an asylum for the insane. And I do know that there were a lot of protests about conditions. And, you know, it was popular in the 60s and 70s. People were starting to get more aware about how conditions were in these hospitals. But there were protests early on at that particular place. So conditions were not good, and it was basically a holding house for every place, everyone they couldn't figure out what to do with. So it was a mess. So thinking about a haunted place, I know it's not open for visitation from people who are doing paranormal investigation, but it has to be a hotbed of maybe even dangerous conditions with the spirits, because if there's anything residual there, it can't be real good.
Do you think they're tired of getting requests to come there and investigate?
You know, I wouldn't doubt, because so many places get requests constantly, and you have to be careful because there really are unethical people in the, you know, you might think all people in the paranormal investigative area are unethical, but really there are unethical people who will do almost anything, including breaking and entering, to get into a place that they've heard is haunted. In fact, there was a famous place here in Ohio, down by Ohio University, which was broken into many, many, many times, and it was owned by the university. So they finally ripped it down, and it also was an asylum. So, but kids were breaking in there, and adults were breaking in there. I mean, everyone's breaking in because of the reputed haunted activity that went on there, and that's a danger for people. You can't break into a place.
Let's go to Max. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, George.
Max in Sandusky, Ohio now. Thanks, Max. Go ahead.
Hi there, George. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing.
I just kind of wanted to talk to all three of you, actually. I'm just listening, and I kind of had this idea here. I'm interested to hear about how you guys feel about the notion of pretty much the association of your ghosts and extraterrestrials, especially considering the term extraterrestrial doesn't necessarily mean something that we can perceive, you know what I mean, in this dimension that we're in.
Elaborate a little bit more on that.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is, like, we have our concept of aliens, and I was listening a while back, and there was a gentleman on that, you know, pretty much had the same feeling. Like, when we think of aliens, we think of, you know, something that we would see, like, in the flesh.
Sure.
But as we know, like, we only have so much capacity to perceive things. Like, there's colors that we can't even perceive as human beings. You know what I mean? So, like, there could be entities around us, whether they're spirits or extraterrestrials or whatever we want to call them, that are all around us at all times. You know, we can access them with, you know, in certain ways, whether it be spiritual or chemical or, you know, like, as far as investigations, like using different technologies and whatnot.
I think you're absolutely right. What do you think, Teresa?
Well, I don't know much about aliens. I do believe that there is life on other planets. I think our universe is just way too big to not consider that a very strong possibility. And I don't know, if I knew the exact mechanism of how a ghost works, then maybe I could speak about how aliens, but when you think about it in the simplest term, this is how I think about it. When we look up into the night sky, we see planets and stars. Well, what we're seeing is basically ghosts of those planets and stars because they're no longer here. They died out millions of years ago, but that's how long it has taken that light to get to us. So in a sense, we're looking at something that no longer exists. We're looking at the remnants, the ghosts, the energy left over that is still traveling through space. I think that the Earth might, or our reality might be working on a dimension that just touches other dimension. I don't know, we get into physics and stuff like that, and I am not the one to speak on the physics of these things, but I do believe that there's so much more of our universe that we don't understand, and that maybe it is some sort of interdimensional being that sometimes we can perceive it, sometimes we can't. Just like maybe that's what a ghost is. Maybe it's just on another plane of reality. I don't know, but I certainly am open to it, because if I believe in ghosts, why wouldn't I believe in that? I think that aliens and life on other planets will probably be proven as a definite fact long before ghosts are. I think that science is heading in that direction, and there are people willing to put their reputation out on the line and actually research that and look towards that. So I believe it's possible. I don't know. I've never had an alien or a UFO encounter, so I can't speak personally of it.
But you've had dreams, haven't you?
Dreams. Now, dreams is another thing. Dreams, I think that is the most common way for our loved ones, that for ghosts to visit us. Why wouldn't an alien do the same thing? If another life form wanted to communicate with us, like, this is what I tell people when we do lectures. If a ghost showed up at the end of your bed in the middle of the night, you'd be terrified. Even if it was the ghost of grandma, you'd be terrified. It's an invasion of your privacy. You'd be startled. You'd be very scared. But if they appeared to you in a dream to talk to you or give you a message, you would wake up and you'd be like, oh, I dreamt about grandma last night. Well, why wouldn't an extraterrestrial being or an alien try and use the same mechanism to communicate? I think it's very possible. And I think these people who have these experiences with aliens that claim to be abducted or claim to have visitation, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's a dreamlike state that they're put in because it is easier to accept in that state. They're more relaxed and their mind is more open to it.
Yeah, that could be. All right, next up we go to Sarah in Wellington, Ohio. Sarah, your turn.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a paranormal investigator as well. I live here in Ohio. I do Mansfield twice a year. We rent out the building. My first question is I have brought something home with me, I believe, and we've saged the place and done other things and cannot get rid of it. Secondly, I wanted to know if you've done Riders Inn in Painesville, Ohio. It's a bed and breakfast. It's about 200 years old. I caught the coolest EVP of a little girl there, and I'll play it for you over the air.
Okay, Tom has already heard that, so we'll listen to it.
Did you hear it?
Yeah, I sure did. Sounds like she's kind of giggling,
I've
huh?
Never gotten.
Wow.
Yeah.
Explain.
It's Painesville Riders Inn.
Sarah, tell us a little bit about the scene when you were recording this.
It's just a small bed and breakfast. We did a recording for about probably 6 hours. I had no idea I caught this, but we did put a ball on the ground and it had a bell in it. And right when we shut off all of our cameras and everything, the ball started to roll across the floor on
wow.
the carpet.
Can you play that one more time for us?
Yes, absolutely.
Here we go. She's having fun.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Singing.
How about that?
And I felt really great while I was in the building. It didn't feel bad. And I was really sick before I went to this investigation. I got there, I felt great the whole time until I left, and then I felt like crap again.
Was there a story of a dead little child in that area?
No, there's actually, I don't know this, and I'm going to go back in February, but I know that there was a woman, the innkeeper's wife, she was murdered there.
Wow. Well, that didn't sound like an older woman laughing.
No, that was a child.
That was definitely a kid. I think so. Hey, thanks, Sarah. Appreciate that. Teresa, what do you think of EVPs?
I think EVPs are the absolute most fascinating experience in the world. When you capture an EVP and the first time you hear one, I remember years and years ago listening to Coast to Coast and hearing EVPs and just being blown away. Because even though I was into ghosts and kind of ghost hunting, we called them vigils back then.
Yeah.
We didn't have the ghost hunting term. But to capture it on a recording device, I'd read about it, that scientists had done it in books, but I'd never heard of a real person just capturing it on a tape recorder. And it blew me away that an EVP can be captured. And whatever people say about ghosts, that, you know, it's in your mind, it's your mind that's haunted, it's your mind playing tricks on you. Maybe your mind can play tricks on you, but how can it play tricks on a digital recorder?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is the closest thing to proof that we really have that there is something. And I've caught so many fascinating EVPs in my lifetime and heard so many incredible EVPs. The problem with EVPs is if you're not there when they're captured, it's really hard. You have to kind of take it on faith that they are genuine. And like the caller who just called, Kathy and I are very familiar with the Riders Inn, and we know Elaine, who owns it, and we both investigated there, and we know the story of Miss Suzanne, who was supposed to haunt there.
Yeah, that's a great story, indeed. We're going to come back and wrap things up with both of you and take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we start our almost full moon open lines. I'm going to have a little contest, too. I've got some books, 5 or 6 books I want to give away for free to someone who gets a trivia question correct. I'm not going to tell you what the question is because I'm not going to tip you off. It will be randomly asked. Not everybody will be asked the question. But when I do, if you answer it correctly and you hear that, you win the books, okay? Tom bought this bell and he insisted that I use it, by the way. So we're going to have full moon open lines at the top of the hour. Now, when we come back in a moment, more with Teresa Argee and Kathy Weber as we talk with the Haunted Housewives. And we'll tell you where you can get their 2 books, by the way. So all that and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Teresa Argee with us, Kathy Weber. And Teresa, where can we get to America's Most Haunted? And then Kathy, tell us about Haunted Willoughby again.
You can get America's Most Haunted, The Secrets of Famous Paranormal Places on Amazon.com or at BarnesandNoble.com or at any brick-and-mortar bookstore. There's also links from our website to buy the book and check it out and see what you think. Interesting things in the book when we do the historical research that makes our book stand out a little bit more than some of the other ghost books out there.
And Kathy, what about Haunted Willoughby, Ohio?
Haunted Willoughby, Ohio, of course, is you can pick it up locally, but I don't think everybody lives here in Ohio with me. But you can get it on Amazon.com, and it is published by History Press, which is now Arcadia, so you can also get it through Arcadia Publishing website.
All right, good. Let's go to final calls now. They are packing up here. Susan's in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi, George, and good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks.
I have a story to tell about my grandmother. You know, she never believed in ghosts or anything, and she always thought people were making it up until something happened to her when she was 20 years old. She was pregnant with my mother, laying in bed, sleeping with my grandfather next to her. And she said all of a sudden a crushing weight sat on her. And she said she couldn't move, and she couldn't call out to my grandfather. She had no way of even letting him know. And after that happened, this thing attached itself to her and followed her the rest of her life. She called it her witch, and she said that she could feel it at night creeping up on the bed when it would visit her. It bit her once, and it bit her in a spot. You know, she lived alone after my grandfather had passed on, and she was in her 70s, and she was telling my aunt, who lived upstairs, that she was bit by this thing, this witch. And they didn't believe her, and she showed them it was in a spot where she couldn't have bit herself.
Jeez.
And she would go and visit. We lived on a farm, and she would come and visit us just to get away from it. And it would follow her out there like 10 days later and visit her out there. So this thing did attach itself to her. She was afraid to have her house blessed when she lived alone because she thought of retaliation. And anyway, are you there?
Yeah, great story.
Oh, okay.
We're just listening. We're mesmerized by it.
Oh, I thought I got disconnected or something. But anyway, so this thing followed her to the day she died. And she just lived with it. We were so afraid that it would be passed on to one of us, you know.
And I guess it was not.
No, it wasn't, thank goodness. But she was very afraid of it, and this happened when she was 20 years old, pregnant with my mother.
Huh.
And it visited her throughout her whole life.
Teresa, when these, and thank you for that story, Sus. When these spirits don't carry themselves on, let's say that they die when the person dies, basically they're gone, they move on, why is that? Why don't they attach themselves to the family?
I have actually never heard of a spirit kind of being passed down from family member to family member unless it was something that was in the home or in the house. I think the attachment, I think that the connection has to be so strong that maybe when the person who it's attached to dies, that breaks that bond. And also, when that person passes on, now they are on the same level as the spirit that attached themselves. So maybe they have a better way to fight this face-to-face, so to speak. Now that they are themselves deceased, maybe they can confront this on a more one-on-one, face-to-face level. Maybe they can resolve the issue that way. I don't know. It's a very interesting concept, though, to think why it dissipates. Maybe it completed its mission. Maybe its mission was to drive it to the point of death. I don't know. I think that's a little extreme, but I don't know. But I think that maybe once you pass, if you have an attachment, you are now have the same power as that attachment. So it doesn't hold any great strength over you, and you can look at it as you would anything else, as a living person to a living person. It would just be a dead person or a deceased person to another deceased person.
Next up, we go to Mary in Wickliffe, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Oh. Good morning, Mary.
Hello, George. Good evening. Hello, ladies.
Hi there.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I can't believe Willoughby, Ohio is on coast. What a wonderful evening.
My favorite Twilight Zone episode.
That's right. You guys are right in my backyard. Wonderful. Before I get to my point, I just want to let George know, I've been to the Ohio State Reformatory as well. My son is a big Shawshank Redemption fan.
Oh, yeah, that's where they did it. Yeah.
That's where they did it. Of course, you know that, George. Okay, well, anyways, I'm calling because, Kathy, I went on your Willoughby Ghost Tour a few years ago, and it was wonderful. Oh, it was wonderful. Everybody enjoyed it, but I want you to tell George and the audience the story of the old Willoughby Tech Center and what happened there when it was a medical school in its early days.
Wow.
George, that was the coolest story of your whole tour.
Oh, wow. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Oh, I enjoyed it. It was wonderful.
Oh, it's great that somebody from Wycliffe called in. That's awesome. The story she's referring to is right in the center of our town is a school called the Tech Center. It's a modern day school, but at one time it was actually a medical college back in the 1830s. And the whole story behind it is fascinating, and it's tied in with the name Willoughby by the whole story. I know you probably don't want me to get into it because I'll just go off. But she said the Tech Center, and I will tell you, Teresa and I have been there recently, which, Mary, nobody knows this. We were there recently by invitation, and we had some really unusual things that don't happen to us when we're investigating something happen while we were at the Tech Center. So there is a lot of things going on that lead me to believe there is a haunting at that school that's probably related back to the days of the old medical college back in the 1830s. There was actually, George, a grave robbing tied in with the school that led people to basically riot the college and get the college out of town. And there are still seems to be ghostly attachments on that property and in the school that is there on the property right at this time.
Wow. And go ahead.
Go ahead. No, it's just a very well-known Willoughby phenomena. And it's interesting that you referred to it, but pretty cool.
Do you find that most towns and communities have a haunted story?
I will tell you that every small town in America is haunted if somebody listens to the stories of the people and takes the time to acknowledge them and even write them down or do something like I did and create a tour. Willoughby's just a little, town of 28,000 people. We aren't Charleston or Savannah with those big ghost tours they have out there. But we have a great... We sell out all year, and people love our stories because our history is very palpable, very real, and very deep and rich. And I guess because, like Teresa and my other ghost walkers, we're all proud of it, so we deliver good stories, and people seem to enjoy them. And like Mary did refer to one of my, if I had to pick one of my favorites, which I hate to do, that story is one of my favorites because I love to tell it, and I think Teresa loves to tell it too. And we both do it in our own way, so it's kind of a unique thing to see people reacting to that particular story when we tell it.
Great story. Alberta, Canada, let's go to Jack. Hello, Jack. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much, George, ladies. What a fortuitous occasion tonight that you guys happen to be on. I got some sad news this afternoon that my aunt had passed away today.
Oh, geez, sorry to hear that.
So sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I as I remember in other coast shows, there's been talk that if a close relative has passed away, that it's not necessarily that uncommon where they will come and visit, their loved one, but it's usually a short time after the passing. I'm wondering if you guys have heard of that or what kind of time factor, if that's likely to occur to me, what kind of time factor I'd be looking at?
That's an interesting question.
I know. Well, we call it a crisis apparition.
Okay.
And when something big happens in your life, that sometimes that apparition, like you said, someone will visit you close to their death, maybe with unfinished business or... just to acknowledge, just so you know everything's okay, or to let you know that they're thinking of you, whatever reason, they will make a visitation specifically shortly thereafter their death. I know people who've talked about it in hours, in days, and even up to a month or two where they've had something happen that indicated their deceased relative was visiting them.
Okay. Well, I thank you kindly. I had a cousin of mine, a very long story, extremely short, who had an extremely rare disease called Pick's disease, actually. And a few months after he had passed away, one day his brother, they were all eating supper around the table. His brother looked up and started biting his finger, and nobody could figure out what he was seeing above the person behind him. And it turned out to be an apparition of his brother who had passed away. And he said, tell mom and dad and everybody that I'm fine. I don't hurt anymore. I'm not in pain. So
that's the way to do it. Thanks, Jack. A couple more phone calls, and then we'll wrap things up here. We go to Maureen in Rockaway Beach, Oregon. Good morning, Maureen. Go ahead.
Good morning, George. Always enjoy your show, and
thank
I'm
you.
Certainly glad to listen to Teresa and Kathy's stories.
The haunted housewives.
Yes. I come from a large Irish family, and one of three sisters, seven brothers. And one of my sisters believes that our family is subject to a generational curse. And I just wanted to know, between the three of you, you know, that's the sins of the father kind of stuff going on. But we do have some odd ducks in our family, so just wanted to throw that out there. Do you guys believe in generational curses?
Well, there's some talk about that, Teresa and Kathy. For example, that the Kennedy family has been under a generational curse, too. What do you think of that?
I think that it certainly makes you think. Like you mentioned, George, the Kennedy family, certainly a family that seems to be cursed. Another one that comes to mind for me is the Lemp family in St. Louis, if there was ever a family.
Oh, my God. Committed suicide, everything. It was horrible.
Yeah, four suicides. I mean, it's, and they had everything. Like the Kennedys, they were wealthy, they were well-respected. It seems that bad luck, negative energy, hard times seem to do follow some families. And where that comes from, we don't know. I think that if you believe in the curse, then the curse is more likely to affect you, for sure. But like what happened with me, with my attachment, it was like I was cursed. That was a good way to describe it. And had I not taken the measures I did to get rid of this, it might have stuck with me and affected my family, affected my children, and that was what terrified me the most. And negative energy, I'm certainly can travel from one person to another. I believe ghosts and spirits are like a residue. This negativeness can get rubbed off and stuck on people and stay in places. So I think there might be something to that. I don't know if it's a gypsy that gives you the evil eye or anything that causes the curse, but it does seem that it does follow family sometimes.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It does happen. And the person who puts the curse on someone, does that ever fall back on them? Does something happen to them?
I would like to think that it does. I think that what you put out into the universe comes back to you somehow. I think that karma or whatever it is, I think that it would have to come back on them. Or maybe there was a reason, maybe they felt it for revenge that they needed to do this. I think the situations might be all different, but certainly something to think about. I don't know if there's any one person that holds the power to just curse people without some sort of repercussions on themselves. I think there would have to be something.
We've got James now in St. Thomas, Canada. Hey, James, thank you for calling, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, so thank you for having me on.
Uh-huh.
Just wanted to ask a couple questions. I'm a Christian, and I just kind of wondering too, if you die and you go to heaven, I'm just thinking, why would your spirit be walking around? So to me, I would figure that if you're a ghost, it would be the soul of a damned, of a person that's damned. Also, as well, like a few years ago, I was living in my apartment, and I had a dream, and in the dream was the exact format of my apartment, and it was a woman and a child standing there looking around the corner, and I knew there were demons. So is it possible that maybe ghosts really are all just demons? Thank you for taking my call. Thank you.
I need to answer this.
It's all yours. All yours.
My personal beliefs are that, and I'm a Christian, Kathy's a Christian, when you die, your soul goes to where it needs to go. What we're seeing is ghosts, that is not your soul. This is what I believe. I believe that that is just part of our energy, our personality. As energy dissipates, as like a cloud dissipates, some part of our personality remains here on Earth. That is what a ghost is. Your soul is where a soul needs to be. I think that if there is good, then there is evil. If people want to call those demons, that's fine. I think that the soul is safe. Our memories, our essence, our personality is not just our soul. I think that's separate. So I think you don't have to worry about that. So I don't think if it's just a ghost, that means it's a damned soul. And I get this all the time, and there are plenty of references in the Bible that talk about ghosts and paranormal things. It is not against being a Christian to believe in these things. And demons, negative spirits happen. Are they demons? I don't know, but certainly if there can be something good and light, there could be just the opposite too. So I think the soul is safe, but your soul can be snug in heaven and you can still have a ghost here on Earth. I don't think that they're two are necessarily connected after death.
I think you're right about that. I think you're right about that. So what do you do next, Teresa? How about you? What's next for you?
Well, I'm working on a couple more books. Kathy and I are working on a project, our Haunted Housewives Occult Kitchen project, which involves our traveling and our paranormal investigating and our love for history and a little bit more of the housewife thing. And so we're working on that and hoping to get that off the ground. I'm also going to write a book about my adventures in Ireland, where I was this fall, and the haunting experiences I had there. And we're getting started. We had our break here now for winter, and spring is just around the corner, and things are going strong, and we've got lots of things coming up, too. And Kathy, she'll tell you, she's about to have her next book come out as well.
All right. How about now, that, Kath? Go ahead.
What she said. Yeah, we do have some projects going, and we're always working on something. And I like the break is over. I've already gotten several phone calls this week for people wanting to book us in October, which is a good move on their part. We're really
a little bit busy
in October.
You book fast. Hey, thanks to both of you. Appreciate you being on the program, both of you. Teresa and Kathy, you're wonderful people. You do great work. Up next, almost full moon open lines. That's right. It's going to be a full moon Saturday night. We're going to take a little advantage of that because it's Saturday now for most people. So we're going to do that, and we've got a little contest coming up, a little trivia sometime during the night. It's one question. If you get it right, I'm going to ship you some books because we do not throw them away.